You're listening to New Hampshire Now, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council and also by New Futures.
This is New Hampshire Now, 914-1450 and nhtalkradio.com. I am Chris Ryan. This hour of the program is presented by ARP New Hampshire as well as the Concord Food Co-op. And this segment of the show is brought to you by the Barley House. The road to the White House begins at the Barley House, home of America's best burger, and WKXL's Pints and Politics series, which is presented by New England College. You can check out past episodes of Pints and Politics at our website, which is nhtalkradio.com. We're inside the Concord Photo Service Main Street studio, and it's time for a focus on the New Hampshire economy. Welcome to the program right now, Business and Economic Affairs Commissioner Taylor Caswell. Taylor, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Thanks, Chris.
Good. Appreciate you joining us for the program. You're in Toronto. We're working on some endeavors on behalf of the state of New Hampshire. We're going to talk about that in a second. But first, a letter from Governor Sununu to agency heads regarding the budget. And I saw a couple things here from this. I think that, A, the governor is making it very clear, because there are a lot of statements in the letter which were not exactly just directives of how to get ready for a possible continuing resolution or a veto. He expressed his feelings about what was taking place within the budget process, income tax, the capital gains tax, and business tax increases, and expressed those in the letter to agency heads. Did you see that letter as a kind of a veto threat, so to speak, or was it just allowing for you to be prepared?
Well, I mean, I read it as the latter, that this was an opportunity for them to let us officially know that, there seems to be some pretty wide gulfs, at least with the House version of the budget, and to be prepared for the potentiality that we might go beyond the June 30th deadline, whether that means it's in the form of a veto or whether that means it's in the form of an inability for the legislature to come to an agreement between the House and the Senate. It's really kind of too early to say, in my opinion. The Senate hasn't really kicked off their attempt at putting together a budget yet. I know our hearing has been scheduled for the week after next, so that process is definitely beginning. But I think it is prudent in terms of good government to be able to be in the position of saying, if we don't get something done by the end of the fiscal year on June 30th, to just be ready to run at last year's levels. So I just sort of saw it as that. And I think others might take it for however they want to take it.
Right. I would say that it had a number of meanings in it, in my view, and one was, making it clear that he was not pleased with the budget that came out of the House. Now the Senate is picking up the process, and he was also referencing in the letter that you and other agency heads should continue on through the process and make the same requests that you made during the process.
I share the governor's sentiment in the sense that the budget that he put forward was very much aimed at using those one-time funds for one-time investments. And I do think that that's really very important, a big part of what we end up selling the state of New Hampshire as to businesses and employers and workforce and tourists and so on, is the fact that we have a very deep sense of fiscal responsibility within our own state government, and that we live up to the fact that we don't charge an income tax or a sales tax, and that we do everything else that we can to provide a strong business environment for you to invest in. We want to be able to continue to be able to say that, and I do think keeping the operating costs over a long term down to a very manageable reason that fit, live within our means, so to speak, is a critical part of this government and what we sell as a state to businesses.
If Steve Shurtleff criticized the governor's one-time spending plans and the process for them and wants to return the money, as the House Democrats do, obviously, to education and the concern in regards to that. And I think that it makes perfect sense, if you're going to structure something within the budget to enhance what we're doing in regards to education. But the concern when you have one-time spending is that the surpluses may be different and you start to expect certain amounts of money. So if you're going to put it into a fund, say, for building aid, that makes sense because you draw from the fund in order to fund specific projects. So I do understand where the House Democrats are coming from on that particular topic. I don't agree with the business tax increases. We can debate the capital gains tax increases. There's some sense to be made there. We've talked about family medical leave insurance a lot in the program, and I feel like the governor, Senator Feltes, and Representative Wallner need to get together and figure something out on family medical leave insurance. That's the income tax he's referring to. So, again, I think that there is concern in regards to the House budget. We've talked a lot about the $26 million for the secure psychiatric unit and plans that many mental health professionals feel are deficient to address that issue. And again, there's still sense to be made in regards to the House process. They're giving it to the Senate. The Senate's going to have a better handle on the revenue issues as well. So when you present to the Senate, what specifically is your department asking for?
Well, I mean, the major piece of what it was in the budget that passed the House for the Department of Business and Economic Affairs was an increase in the amount of funding that we use for marketing the state of New Hampshire. There is a statute in place that says that 3.15% of the state room and meals tax is then recycled back into the marketing efforts for the state, and we perform that on behalf of the state. So this governor and the House agreed that this was a legitimate funding level, and it was, you know, not a huge increase, but it was enough to get noticed from our standpoint. Other than that, there weren't a lot of other changes from our previous budget in the House version.
In regards to what the Business and Economic Affairs office is looking to do and how it coincides, you know, with the budget, is there a strategic element of what you're looking to do that's within the budget outside of the increased funding? In other words, are there projects that fall in the purview of other departments or aspects of the budget that were part of the governor's budget but not a part of the House budget that you'd like to see the Senate put back in? Strategic initiatives, education stuff, the business taxes. Is there things missing right now from the House version that you would like to see back in?
Well, not as it relates to our department.
Okay.
I think most of what we do in that respect is with partnerships and collaborations that we form with other state agencies, other quasi-government agencies like Community Development Finance Authority or the Business Finance Authority, or with business groups to try to find ways to leverage, whether it's marketing or whether it's new policy initiatives, to help us design and think through some of those things. We're very much based in collaboration at our department. And honestly, from the marketing standpoint, what we're going to be able to do over the, as a result of this new department, and as we've talked about before, is bring together the ability for us to use the tourism message of lifestyle assets and what you can get when you visit New Hampshire, and translate that into a workforce recruitment message. Not exclusively, but I think one leads to the other. I will often meet with groups, or I'm at a place where I'm giving a speech or whatever, and sometimes I'll ask people, how many people in this room are here because someone back in your lineage came here on vacation? And you can almost always guarantee half the room, at least half the room, of people who say they were here because they came here on vacation. We need to continue to recognize that that's kind of the tip of the spear of this ability to draw workforce and businesses into the state, is because of the experiences that they're having on the front end as a visitor.
That is Taylor Caswell, Business and Economic Affairs Commissioner for the Granite State, joining us here on the New Hampshire Now program. This hour of the show is brought to you by ARP New Hampshire, as well as the Concord Food Co-op. And this segment of the show brought to you by the Barley House. We're inside the Concord Photo Service Main Street studio. And one of the concerns I have in the budget is that the economic conditions here in the state right now are right where they need to be. And I feel like one-time spending makes sense. I feel like funding the Division of Youth, Children, and Families, DCYF, to its full extent makes sense. I feel like further investment in education makes sense. But I don't feel like you do it outside of the constraints of the what the governor proposed. I think the governor's budget was a good budget. Are there concerns that you have that the trajectory of New Hampshire's success story may change with this budget, or is the economy, which is basically my view, the economy acts very much outside of the constraints of what government does. And the economy is going to do what it does. People are going to do what they do. Government can hinder things and change things and create a path. But overall, an increase in business taxes here or there, capital gains tax increases, if the economic conditions are ripe, individuals are going to work through those types of things.
Yeah, I mean, there is obviously a big part of the economy that is dependent on things that the state has no control over. But I think overall, as you say, the governor's budget and the House budget, there are a lot of places where we're all trying to get to the same place. We might be taking different paths, or we might be looking at different ways to achieve that. But you know, there's questions over revenue and where do you get the revenue and where does that money end up? These are sort of things that fall outside of our direct bailiwick right now. Mm-hmm. But from where I sit, I want to be able to tell the story of New Hampshire as a place where you can live and work and has communities where people can find that experience. And that's what I care about. And I don't really see anything huge jumping out at me and saying that's going to fundamentally change any of this. I think that we all have our own personal thoughts about how that has to look, and we'll just kind of have to see how this all comes out in the wash.
What are your feelings right now about the economic strength here in New Hampshire? We've seen nationally and here in New Hampshire really good economic numbers, but in my view, the psyche of the U.S. citizen and the New Hampshire resident is still lagging well behind what the numbers indicate. Wage growth amongst the lowest paying jobs and the kind of the middle, lower tier jobs, and amongst middle tier jobs as well. Wages are slowly rising and increasing, but individuals don't appear to be taking advantage of the opportunities that may present themselves in terms of other employment, not necessarily looking for other employment. They're staying in the same job or working multiple jobs as opposed to looking at the unemployment numbers, looking for work and finding situations that that work well for them. Do you feel like there's still a lagging psyche from the recession? Individuals are not moving jobs as much as perhaps they should and utilizing workforce training programs?
Well, yeah. I don't know that it's necessarily a holdover from the recession as much as it is just the environment right now. There's a lot of hesitancy from people as to what's coming next. We're in a transitional period, obviously, of some type between what people call the industrial age and the digital age. You know, where are those jobs going to be? What am I prioritizing in my life?
And that feels more rural than in urban areas as well. So that would really relate, obviously, to New Hampshire.
Right. And so, I mean, kind of as a result, and this isn't anything we necessarily make official policy, but I mean, from my standpoint, I want to run as hard as we can at as many of these initiatives as aggressively and quickly as we can to get these pieces and these sort of new pillars of our economy set up in the strongest possible way, because there are no straight lines in economic development. No one's ever seen sustained growth for ages and ages and ages. It always goes up and down. And so I think we have an ability to limit any downs that might be coming that seem like they're going to be inevitable at some point, to be able to have a stronger foundation in place for the types of growth sectors that we know we're seeing growth in right now, and to use that and live off of that through that period of time seems like an approach that we really need to be pursuing, and we are right now.
Tell me about your trip to Toronto. What was the emphasis there, and what were your takeaways?
Well, along those same lines, we're trying to, I think, really grow our opportunity and our exposure to the Toronto market, the central Canadian market, both from a standpoint of business development, but also from the standpoint of travel and tourism. There is a huge population. Toronto's the biggest city in Canada. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of similarities in terms of the types of businesses that are seen growing there. They're smaller businesses. A lot of them are in tech and advanced manufacturing and life science. So what we did was we worked with the consulate in Toronto, the American consulate, and with some others to put together a small breakfast that we hosted with the consulate to talk to businesses about the opportunities in New Hampshire. A lot of that is all the things that we've talked about before, the basis for what's happening in Manchester, what's happening on the seacoast, the fact that we have these great collaborations in research and innovation and education and training with our educational institutions, and to really tell that story. And we had some businesses with us from New Hampshire that operate in the life science industry. Jania out of Manchester and Novacure over on the seacoast, they offered to come and participate with us, tell about their story, why they're here in New Hampshire. And then, you know, also during the day, we talked with travel and tourism writers from that area and bloggers and influencers, social media and that sort of thing, and with some airlines to talk about expanding access to New Hampshire through Manchester Boston Airport, and to talk about what types of experiences people from that area of the world can have when they come here.
That is a really, really good idea. The airlines one that has been underutilized, even in Boston, for many years to get a direct flight. And the Rocky writers would complain about this over and over again, that they'd have to drive up from Boston to Montreal because they couldn't get a flight into Montreal that was reasonably priced. The same issue happens with Toronto and Boston. I think it may have gotten a little bit better. But connecting New Hampshire and the Manchester-Boston Regional Airport, or perhaps other smaller airlines and some of the smaller airports, that would be absolutely huge for tourism, because that's missing. And folks are, in my view, hesitant to cross the border still and drive long distances and don't have passports and so forth. Is there anything that can be done on that side of things? The passport element, which, post 9/11, it took a number of years, but now you have to have a passport to travel back and forth from Canada. If you have children, the children don't have to have passports if you're driving. I think with flight, you do have to have them. So multiple things there. We'll do the airlines first, and if you feel something is going to happen there. And also, is there any way to change the passport impediment?
Yeah. So on the airline thing, yes, we are getting very aggressive. It's one of those things that we're going hard at right now, is to build back a lot of that passenger volume that moves through Manchester Boston Regional Airport. And I have to really take my hat off to Ted Kitchens, who is the new airport director down there. This is a guy who gets it, who understands how to do this work. He ran the airport in Houston, Bush International. And so he's run a big airport. He's worked with airlines. He knows the executives. He knows how these route development issues come together and how you get that done. So Ted was with us in Toronto, very, very deliberate, and working with a couple of airlines that I don't want to talk about just yet, but that we're working with to try to find some access.
You can guess, probably.
Now, as far as the clearance goes, Pearson Airport in Toronto is one of the pre-clear airports. So,
and what does that mean?
And what that means is that U.S. Customs does their work on that side of the border.
Okay.
So you can fly to an airport like Manchester that doesn't have that customs operation on site. So I flew in and out of the island airport, the city airport in Toronto. They do not have pre-clearance. And so when I came back, I had to fly into Boston. Don't tell anybody that I flew to Boston. But I had to fly into Boston.
Are there any flights currently that connect from Toronto to Manchester?
No.
Okay.
No. So you have to go to Boston.
Right.
But that's one of the things we're trying to change.
Was it expensive or?
No, it wasn't that bad.
Okay. It used to be, but I
always
think the price
has
gone down. I know, I understand that. Yeah. But it used to be the huge impediment for air travel to from New England to Toronto and Montreal was cost. Cost is still high, I think, for Montreal, but Toronto, I think
Montreal's
there's more
really
options.
High. Toronto is different.
Yeah.
But there are two airports in Toronto, one right downtown, and then there's Pearson that's just outside of town. But if you fly into that city airport, they still don't have the pre-clearance on that side. So you have to go through it when you get into Boston. And that was terrible. It's like an hour and a half line coming in. If we can get pre-clearance or we fly out of Pearson into Manchester, you can do that without having to invest in like several million dollars worth of new sort of TSA entry, whatever it is you have to do for the customs in Manchester, which is kind of what we're doing. And we're targeting airports that have that pre-clearance in place.
So there's no way of going backwards in regards to passports, but what can happen is speeding up the process where individuals are able to gain access via passports.
Well, when you're talking about challenges from a timing standpoint and you know, crossing the border standpoint, the issue is more getting into the United States than leaving the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to find a way to, one, not have to necessarily make those major investments in the Manchester airport just yet, because we need to grow that passenger volume there, but also look for those airports that have that pre-clearance in place that we can take advantage of. And that's where we're really sort of targeting right now.
Taylor, as always, appreciate you joining us for the program.
Good to see you, Chris.
That is Taylor Caswell, New Hampshire's Business and Economic Affairs Commissioner here on Hampshire Now, 1-800-914-1450 and nhtalkradio.com. I am Chris Ryan. This hour of the program is presented by ARP New Hampshire, as well as the Concord Food Co-op, and that segment of the show brought to you by the Barley House.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council, and also by New Futures.